All right, boys, just listen up for a sec. Can you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound make you feel? Give me some adjectives.
It's nice. It's kind of like reassuring. Steady.
That sounds like a very accurate kind of... I really like the sound of that mechanism.
It's very precise, isn't it?
Yeah. It also makes me feel like I should be somewhere that I'm not. Like I'm in a rush or something.
What have
I
forgotten?
Kind of running late. But it does sound very nice.
I think all of that is very valid, boys. But let me tell you, this is the sound of a British-designed mechanical timepiece from the talented team at Marlowe Watch Company, sponsors of this episode. And with Marlowe, each collection is influenced by a historical story of inspiring human endeavour. Now, I've spent some time at their HQ recently because, well, I'm curious about mechanical timekeeping and also how things work. And I can tell you that there is so much very pleasing attention to detail that goes into each and every watch design. Now, these guys are serious about their watches, and you can tell by looking at some of the watch reviews online. I mean, the words quality and value come up time and again. Visit marlowewatchcompany.com to see for yourself. Marlowe Watch Company, time well spent, which I also like to think could be said for this podcast. Hello, it's Rob here. And I've decided to come on at the beginning of this week's episode just to say that this one is a little longer, quite a bit longer actually, than most of our previous podcasts. Now, it's another quickfire round, and I think we just enjoyed luxuriating and discussing a bit more all of the different sketches that we went through. So what I'm going to suggest is that if you do feel like you could do with a break halfway through or whatever, maybe treat it as a part one and part two. So maybe after listening to the Flotsam and Jetsam sketch discussion or the one on contronyms, maybe give it a break, part one done, and come back to it at a later date, part two. There you go, just a suggestion. Here's the podcast. Hello and welcome to Sketchplanations, the podcast. Now, in a move that's been described by the trusted podcast publication Get Your Ears Round This as possibly hasty, and by podcast gossip columnist Henry Headphones as a maverick manoeuvre, this week I've decided to dispense with the lengthy introduction and get straight on with the meat of this audible feast. A feast that not only provides you with your five a day, but also has the protein, carbohydrate, and unsaturated fat content for a robust and nutritious listening lifestyle. It's all too easy to assume that simply balancing your audio intake with your audio output will help maintain a happy, healthy podcast listening. But when you dig into the science, there's so much more to it. It's not just about how much you put into your ears. It's the quality of the ingredients that also matters. And so before we tuck into this bombastic banquet, a toast to my wholesome podcast companions, John O'Hay and Tom Pellerow. Good evening, gentlemen. I raise my microphone to you.
That's amazing.
Same to you, Robert. That's amazing.
What's been going on since we last met? What were we talking about last week?
We were talking about the cost of being late.
Everyone was really on time today.
Well, never again will I be late.
It really sunk in.
Because I respect you guys. I respect your time.
Tommy, have you played cricket recently? Had your cricket match?
I did. Yeah. I had,
was it this weekend?
This weekend just gone. In tradition, I managed to run myself out trying to go for a highly optimistic run on the second to last ball, and I got a wicket with what was described as an even slower ball.
An even slower
ball. Yeah. It was good fun.
And Jono, did you have a? I think I saw you had a swimming first this weekend.
Did, yeah. Quite enjoy the open water swimming, as we have done rather a lot together. And this weekend took our 11-year-old and did 500 metres in the lake.
It's not his first open water, but I guess it's his first kind of significant length.
Yeah, we've dipped around in the sea or whatever for a bit, but actually gone... proper, and it was a hot day. It was absolutely lovely, and he nailed it. Yeah,
how cool!
Really nice.
I really
enjoyed it.
I like that, guys. I like that. No kind of exceptional sporting endeavours for me, sadly.
Oh, sorry about that, mate.
Yeah.
Next week. Yeah.
Next week. There's always next week.
It's a fresh start tomorrow.
Yeah. I used a metaphor there in my introduction. And I wrote it and then I thought, I really like metaphors. And I've liked them ever since I first learned what one was, probably like year 7 or year 8 English lessons.
I never metaphor I didn't like.
Yeah! Now we're firing!
Sorry about that.
I really like them. I really like them. I really like using them, writing them. I like it when I hear them or notice them in like sports commentary. They pop up every now and then. Comedy articles. You often kind of read them in newspaper or magazine articles. I really enjoy a good metaphor.
Well, I actually studied metaphor as part of my design PhD.
Did you?
And, yeah, looked at all sorts of interesting aspects because metaphors shape the way we think. So I was interested in things like metaphors for ideas. For example, an interesting trait about... Actually, it's interesting you talked about this banquet, right? So ideas of food is a common metaphor. And so, you know, a big idea to absorb is, you know, I'm gonna have to chew on that for a bit.
Yeah.
I need to take a bit of time to digest that idea. Whereas, you know, you could give like little snacks, like little ones. So ideas of food is one thing, but actually there's a problem with like ideas of products, ideas of all sorts of physical things. But there's, if I give you an idea, I've still got the idea. So like the whole thing breaks down the way we talk about ideas. Anyway, yeah, metaphors, really interesting.
Wicked, wicked. Tommy, what's your relationship with metaphors and linguistic devices?
Well, like yourself, I'm very visual in my thinking. And I think it's quite easy to get trapped into certain metaphors. And sometimes it's kind of an aspect, you know, like John said, you can't, when you share an idea, you've still got an idea. So you need other metaphors and other framings. And I do remember reading your PhD thesis, Jono, on framing. It was really fascinating. We absorbed quite a lot of that into how we developed our ideas.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Interesting.
Metaphor is really good for sketchmanations as well. And so, I mean, you know, not long ago, we talked about front stage, backstage, right? It's a metaphor for a way to understand our behavior. And there's so many, you know, accountability ladder is a way to understand it. You have like, what's it, Maslow's hierarchy. So you have all these abstract things and you put them in an order and all of a sudden it's clarifying, you know, that I think clarifying is another example of knowing is seeing.
Yes.
Making stuff clearer helps you know it better. It's fascinating stuff.
What I really, really enjoy, it often comes up in comedy stand-up routines, is when the comedian has purposefully taken that metaphor too far.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoy that. And they know what they're doing.
I think you had people hovering by the accountability ladder not long ago as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Pushing people up and down it.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, always fun to extend the metaphor or mix them up as well.
With a cherry picker on the side.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Oh, all good fun. Well, listen, guys, I'm going to suggest that we get a shift on with the podcast in earnest, because this week is another quickfire bumper pack episode and there's no time to lose. This week, we're going to cover as many of Jono's sketches as appropriate for an easy listening podcast related to words. We're talking vocabulary, definitions, maybe a bit of grammar. Now, I've not been able to find a way of getting the artwork for this episode to change continuously as we go through all the different words and sketches. So I'll pick one as the main event, and then I'll make sure that I include links in the podcast description to all the other sketches in the order that we go through them. So you can just kind of click through and see what we're talking about as we go from one sketch to another. And I've certainly found in the past that visualizing some of Jono's sketches really helps me learn stuff and cement that in my brain. So I would recommend using those links to bring up the sketches on the screens as we talk about them, if possible. Obviously, if you're driving, please don't. And finally, a reminder that we'll be going through your correspondence since the last episode at the very end of the podcast. Right then, Jono, do you want to kick us off with the first sketch related to words generally that you've selected? We've each selected a few.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to. It's funny, isn't it? There's a lot of sketches about words, actually, which is a strange thing to draw.
It was great. It was lovely to have a good flick through them all.
Yeah.
What are you going with?
I'll start with a really easy one. It's one of my favourite ones. I actually have it up on the wall. It's called Caffee Cock.
Pardon?
Yeah, I know. Caffee Cock, which is a word from the Sami people of northern Norway, Finland or Sweden. And it means the distance you can go before you need a cup of coffee, which comes up a lot in on weekends and when we pop out somewhere. And in fact, because it's up on the wall, my kids will ask me, be like, how far have we gone now? Is it one caffee cock yet? We need to go to the cafe. And I'm like, yes, it's one caffee cock. Quite a long time ago. Yeah. Maybe three caffee cocks in into this walk.
And it's specifically what I like about it is it specifically it's fairly arbitrary, but is it a distance as opposed to a unit of time? It's a unit of distance.
It's a distance, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. Which, you know, one's caffee cock might be a different length than somebody else's caffee cock.
Well, I guess
depending on the day.
And what's lovely about the visualization of this, as I was just talking about in the sketch, your sketch brings that to life, right? So you talked about it there, John. Like you've left home, you're in the car, maybe I don't know, you're off on holiday or something, or you know, you maybe had a coffee with you, or maybe it's time if it's really early in the morning to just pull over at a service station and get yourself a coffee.
Yeah, I guess the caffee cock in a car is quite a bit further, isn't it?
Yeah.
The sketch has a person in the waist, a bit like Hoth. Planet Hoth or something in the snow, making a coffee and then moonwalking his way and then going, I think it's time for coffee again. One coffee cup later.
Yeah, to me,
one of my favorites.
It looks like you're on the North Pole or something. And the reality is, for most of us, a coffee cup is just like down the high street. You know, it's like actually managed to get the kids out on a Saturday morning, so it must be time for another coffee. You've strolled 500 meters to get to the town center, sort of thing.
I always like, was it one of the episodes of Peppa Pig, the dad's favourite room in the museum is the coffee shop. She's pretty standard. Yeah. I mean, it's basically what the National Trust is built on, isn't it? Anyway, caffee cock, it's a good word.
I'm glad we've clarified this, actually, because when I first saw it, I thought it was about your first coffee, but it's not, is it? It's before needing
another.
A cup of coffee, whether that's your first or the next one, whatever it might be.
Does it get longer after each coffee? It's just difficult to say.
Different
for everyone.
Great, I love that. And the beauty of that, which I really love, is that is as you say, from the Sami people from right up in the north of Scandinavia.
Yeah,
lovely. Lovely. Thanks, Sean. Right. Well, let's move on, as we're going to get through a fair few of these, hopefully. Tommy. What have you got for your first pick?
So I've got one that I actually only realised about 3 weeks ago when doing spelling with my kids. And it's about the verb noun, advice versus advice. And the verb having an S and the noun having a C. And it wasn't actually until we were doing a load of spellings. I was going down going, oh, hang on, and it blew my mind. So, you know... device. I'm going to really make a mess of this. Johnny, can you explain this one for us? But it's a really good one.
Basically, any of these words like devise, advise, license, practice, in British English at any rate, the verb has an S, but the noun device, advice, license, and practice has a C. So you can sort of remember them that way. So, I mean, for me, it was always license.
Yes.
And license.
Yeah.
It's actually a bit confusing because in the US, they just use the S form for that. But in the UK, you can license somebody and your driving license that you get back has got a C in it. Just like, I mean, the easiest one to remember is like advise and advice. Like those are sort of driven in, but actually it's a pattern generally across all of these types of words. Yeah, I know, it's the same. I just wanted to clear that up for myself, which is always the genesis of the sketch a little while ago.
And thank you for putting the little American flag next to the ones where it's used in both or not, as you were.
Yeah, it confuses things otherwise. But it's in British English, at any rate, it's quite consistent. The verb is the S and the noun is the C. So if you're ever checking your kids' spelling, you can use that as a plan.
Check yourself first.
Yeah.
Yeah. You said something there, Johnny, which you've said a few times over the past few weeks of podcasting, in that you've made these, it's come up a few times, where you've done a sketch to clarify it for yourself. That was your main driver for it. I like that. Mm. I like that because it reassures me.
Yeah. I mean, often a lot of them are like that. It's a bit like that. I did a sketch not too long ago called Ask the Question at Talks, which is basically like if you're sat there at a talk and you don't know what something is that they're talking about, you should ask it because it probably means lots of other people are asking. So that's sort of my model I operate on, is like, if I don't really know whether it should be a license with an S or a C, there's probably a lot of other people who are in that situation. So I should go figure it out and explain it. So there you go.
Yeah. Which one would you use, Tommy, there, well, as your kind of anchor point?
A phone being a device with a C
device
is definitely one that really works for me, and I can probably then almost work everything else out from there.
I remember seeing an example, James Bond was licensed with a license to kill.
Ooh.
And that was the first one has got an S in the UK English, and the second one's got a C, even though you say them exactly the same.
He was licensed with a license to kill.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas in America, it would be both S's.
It would.
Oh, the poor copywriter who had to check that. I wonder how many debates they had. My next one, affect and effect, is potentially very linked to advice and advise. No, the other way around.
Go on, let's bring this up. Just so listeners know, we're flicking between a lot of screens at the moment as we bring up sketches each time. Just so if you hear kind of clicking going on. So affect and effect. Go on, Tommy.
Which?
What do you want to say
about
this?
Oh, my God. Which, first of all, I have never in my life understood. And I'm now really focused on Jono's very excellent picture, possibly one of your earliest ones. It says 51. So this would have been in your first, like, 12 months, wouldn't it? And if Jono explained, I'm going to make a mess of it.
Yeah, you know what? This is one where I like the sketch. It's super simple and it works for me. However, I consider it a failed sketch because I have shared it with a number of people and they still struggle with it. So I've also seen somebody like wholesale copy this for some other article that they were doing. But anyway, the idea is it's a bit similar, as you say, Tom. Affect is a verb, so you affect something.
You do it to someone else. So this person is pushing
to something else.
So Jono is pushing Rob into the lake, is what's happening on the left.
Right. And the effect of me pushing Rob into the lake is that he fell in and there was a big splash. And so that's what the two pictures are. Somebody pushing, that's the affect, and then somebody falling in is the effect.
So
and yet, people struggle. People struggle with this one.
Do you know, it's really funny, and we'll come on to it because we've got lots of things like this. This is one, because I do struggle with some of these, but this is one that I don't struggle with for some reason. For some reason, whenever I learned it, it just kind of lodged itself nicely and neatly.
How do you remember
like
it?
A Tetris, 3D Tetris. I don't really need to. I just kind of know. It's one of those things that I just kind of...
Okay.
Do you know what? I read,
settled in nicely in the brain.
I read today, if you need a way... Tom, this might help. There's somebody who says there's the acronym RAVEN is remember, affect is a verb, effect is a noun.
Is that going to help you, Tommy?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure I was there in the English class about nouns and verbs, which I really struggle with the kids. but I'm going to remember it as the person pushing is affecting and he's an asshole. So
okay, that's good.
Okay, good.
That is
the person
good.
Who's been affected, who's in the water, who's pushing around, is an idiot for being pushed in.
Oh, come on! Right, I really, really want this to work for you, Tommy. Can I randomly and as a surprise test you on that in a couple of weeks' time without you knowing?
Okay.
And I want you to explain it why you know you've got it the right way around. Yeah, have you got that locked in?
I'm going to have to do some more English lessons on a noun. Oh, gosh, it's just embarrassing, right?
But then you can think of the sketch and the pushing and the asshole and the idiot.
I can do that. Good. Thank you.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Excellent. Well done, mate. There's podcast another couple there.
It's just self-help for Tommy, really, isn't it? It's the whole aim.
It was all designed for you. Let's do a grammar.
Yeah, at the same
time.
Oh, no, please.
Spelling.
We've got foreign languages coming up in a couple of weeks, haven't we? French specifically. And we all know your opinion, your feelings about learning French. I was going to say the French. No, not at all.
Rob, what have you got?
Okay, so my first one, thank you, Joe. Pleonasm.
Nice.
Yeah, a pleonasm. I've never heard of this word. So a pleonasm is an overabundance of words. It's the use of redundant words in a sentence or in... and you mentioned this here in your sketch, Johnny, often used in phrases or idioms. And there are quite a few different types of pleonasms because I started looking into it, and it does get quite deep into grammar. So I started to get a bit confused. So I've tried to bring it back up a level. But it is the kind of the use, maybe sometimes a repetition of words with the same meaning in a phrase or in a sentence, or sometimes it's words that just aren't required to say what you want to say. There are just abundance of words in there.
Give some examples, Rob.
So,
it's simple.
An example. So the one example that comes to me that I hear quite a lot that annoys me is pre-prepare. Oh, have you pre-prepared for the meeting? What? It's not prepared. But on your sketch, and I love the sketch because you've managed to bring in these very common pleonasms, Jonah, into one scene, which I really, really love. So if you are listening, head along and check out the pleonasm sketch. So you've got, so another example is an unexpected surprise.
Yeah.
Or an exact replica, a personal friend, or a free gift. You don't need both of those words. It's an overabundance. There's another one that I saw as an example is to kick it with your feet. What else can you kick it with? You sometimes hear people say, I myself think that the grass should be shorter, or personally I think that the sky is blue. And then this one was interesting. Tuna fish. You don't need the fish. An added bonus, regular routine.
You do need the tuna.
There's loads.
I was like, what? It's just not just fish.
yeah. But you don't need those. And then there are some that established in phrases and idioms, as you mentioned, John. Things like terms and conditions. Another one's null and void. If something's null and void, you don't need both of that. And there are
braces, isn't it?
There are also repetitions in some abbreviations. So a PIN number.
Yeah.
Or an ATM machine, or finally an LCD display.
Yeah,
liquid crystal display.
There's many we use all the time. It's just common parlance, but it's just extra words. You don't need them.
Yeah, I was just looking at some of the examples in the description from the sketch. It's quite good ones. It's from George Carlin.
This is good. Your caption for this is excellent. It's worth a read.
And we do say these ones. So. Past history, my future plans, over exaggerating, new beginning, end result. I mean, just loads, isn't it?
It seems to be
past experience.
Very popular in kind of speeches or in sort of political thing. Like, I'm immediately thinking of Boris Johnson in this respect. Like, he'd have three things, wouldn't he? Every single word he'd say, he'd sort of triple embellish it almost.
I can picture that. I can definitely picture that. Yeah.
Sum total.
Yeah. There's so many, aren't there? There's so many. But yes, if always worth getting along, having a little look at the sketch. But yeah, that passage that you popped up there from, was it comedian George Carlin, Jono, is excellent. It's worth a read. It really kind of hammers home the point that we're talking about. So a pleonasm. There you go. That was a new word for me. Thank you, Jono. We're going to come, let's circle around back to you.
Cool. All right. So I'll do a really simple one, and it's another really old one. And it's just a little point that I just really like. So it's actually about amateur and professional. And it's just, there's not really much in the sketch, but it was something I realized as I was reading a book by Clay Shirky, which is, I think, often that you think of the professionals as like the people who are the legitimate and really good at things. And amateur is sort of also means that you're not really good at stuff. You're not as good as the professionals. You're not as worthy of it as the professionals. But what the point was that the amateur actually as a word comes from the Latin amare, to love. And in fact, amator is a lover. And so amateur, the root of the word, is that somebody loves what they're doing. Mm. And I really like it that actually an amateur is not somebody who's worse. You're actually doing it for the love of it rather than for the extrinsic reward, the pay of it. And so that was amateur is like you're driven by an intrinsic reward, something that you get benefit from doing this activity, even if nobody's paying you. And professional, you're doing it for the extrinsic reward, and you might not do it if that went away. And so actually I sort of reframed amateur to me, instead of it being like worse than professional, it's like just as good, if not better in many ways. I love it.
So I'm going to pick up on that. Simple. Yeah, I really like that. Now, you've explained that really well, Johnny. So now amateur, because sometimes I find it difficult to describe, well, not difficult, but sometimes I'll use words which I'm not that happy with when talking about things I like doing in my spare time. So what's that? Is that your hobby? Is it a pastime? So am I a hobbyist? Am I a woodworking enthusiast? No, I'm a woodworking amateur.
Yeah.
I think that perfectly describes what I want to say about it.
Yeah. Doing it for the love of it, for the sake of doing the activity itself. Yeah.
And almost you could say you're woodworking and more of it. You love it. You're a lover of it. Right.
Absolutely.
For me, amateur is like almost like derogatory. You'd say, oh my God, what an amateur.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. If someone makes a mess on the first tee of a golf, like if we're out with someone and they bank it into the woods, you're like, what an amateur. You know, it's a really unfair use of it. And Johnny, this is lovely for the amour of it, for the love of it. Much better.
Yeah.
Well, you talk about golf. I mean, pro-am is professionals. A pro-am tournament is professionals and amateurs playing together, right? Maybe that would have been an idea for a sketch. Let me see, would that work? Probably not.
maybe it would. Nice. It's tough for the amateurs though, isn't it? Because, you know, for the professionals, it's their day job. Get to spend a lot more time doing it.
Yeah. I like that. That's really clarified. I mean, the danger is though, I start using it in the context of its true meaning, but it's the way it's taken is in the context of how it's now been understood.
Yeah. Yes. People may not understand it that way.
Yeah.
However,
we can bring it back.
You can still feel good. You can use it for the amour of it.
Well, let's start a campaign to bring amateur back in its true sense now on this podcast. Nice one, Johnny. That's really lovely. Okay, Tommy, let's swing it back around to you. What you got?
So the next one is a word that I cannot pronounce. And the second word is victory. Good. Victory nearly as costly as defeat. Johnny, what's...
A Pyrrhic victory.
Pyrrhic. Pyrrhic victory.
Pyrrhic.
So a victory that's nearly as costly. Well done, our victory, sir. If we are victorious in one but more battles, we shall be ruined. And it does feel a little bit like Ukraine has turned into a bit of a Pyrrhic victory, potentially, for almost all parties involved. And it does worry me a little bit in the fact that you've got the Russians, the Ukrainians, the Americans, the West. And I'm very, very concerned about a potential Pyrrhic victory in Taiwan one day with, what's the sort of global movement. Mm. So it's a little bit front of mind, but I think it's something you've got to be aware of in many circumstances. Sometimes you get into an argument and it becomes like a Pyrrhic victory. You might sort of maybe win the argument. I don't think there's any winners out of any argument, really. But often it costs you a lot more to win an argument than it does to have even taken part. And in business, it can be kind of Pyrrhic victories as well. So it's a really cool word. Where does it come from, Johnny?
Yeah, no, it's got a nice story behind it. I'd heard the term, but and this was a suggestion from somebody actually, but it's actually from King Pyrrhus of Epirus back in 279 BC, and he was a sort of elite general, and he got called over to take on some battles, and he had these elite troops, and basically they won a bunch of battles, but they lost so many people in the battles that he was wondered whether or not the whole thing was worth it. So that goes with the story, apparently. He's like, if we're victorious one more time, we'll be ruined. So you won, but actually the losses were so big as to be like, well, that wasn't really a win.
Yeah.
And I think a great example is in business. Like, imagine you keep lowering your prices, yeah, and you win, somebody else goes out of business, but actually you now don't have a proper business either, for example. So yeah, lots of applications of Pyrrhic victories, and definitely worth avoiding.
Is it the same as cutting off your nose to spite your face? Is that
similar
kind of realm,
like,
isn't it, as an idiom?
Or maybe even a hollow victory, because there's nothing inside that you've won.
I guess for King Pyrrhus, obviously, he didn't mean to lose so many, rather than the cutting off your nose to spite your face. Like,
yes.
One of the examples I mentioned was about, you know, you finally force the family to get out of the house and go somewhere, and everybody's in such a mood about it that nobody's having a good time anymore. And you're like, well, that was
Pyrrhic, not really worth Pyrrhic it. Victory. That's a nice decidedly user Pyrrhic case. Yeah. Love that. And you yell at kids to get them out to have fun, and no one has any fun because you've yelled at everyone. Right.
We haven't fun now.
Having fun yet.
I feel like we get a really lovely insight to your boys' weekends here. It's often recurring themes about the challenge of getting everyone out of the house.
We just did a beautiful open water swim.
A Pyrrhic victory. Again, and the sketch on this one is an absolute stunner.
It is. It's very cool.
It's fantastic. Beautiful. Yeah, it's one of those with a really excellent backdrop as well. Yeah, which
a gory battlefield.
Yeah, but you've used red sparingly, but in a way that really makes your
There's
point.
There's even a dead elephant in the foreground. Oh,
yeah. Well, he might be having a rest.
Yeah, exactly.
On top of the field.
There's definitely someone squashed under
Yeah, there is.
Oh, I've just noticed this guy. There's this guy right at the bottom. He thought he'd climbed up the rocks to save him.
And dump in the back.
just keep on giving.
Yeah. Well worth a look, that sketch, listeners. Well worth a look. Okay, I'm going to move us on to two words. I think I've only ever heard them used together. Flotsam and jetsam. So here we're talking about not the Jetsons.
It sort of sounds like some kind of 70s band, doesn't it? Flotsam and Jetsam.
Mork
and Mindy.
I'd heard the phrase quite a little bit, but there's a cafe not too far from me called Flotsam and Jetsam, which then when your sketch came out about it, John, I was like, yeah, okay, now I get it. So let me tell you the difference between Flotsam and Jetsam.
Have you shared the sketch with them? It's not clear that everyone, they'll likely know the difference.
With the cafe?
Yeah, good try.
Yeah, they should pop it on all their mugs.
Like, so thanks for that. What do you want?
So again, this is a really lovely sketch because there's quite a bit of colour in it, which really draws the eye. So it sets out the difference between these two words, flotsam and jetsam, from the marine, the world of being out at sea, right? So flotsam describes floating debris that's accidentally lost from a ship if it maybe lists on one side, or if it's grounded, or if it sinks, or whatever. So it's items or articles from that ship that then float off accidentally because of an accident. A bit of pleonism. And jetsam are items that have been deliberately jettisoned. They have been deliberately thrown off of a ship or a vessel at sea, maybe because they're sinking, or maybe they need to help their weight distribution or something like that. So flotsam and jetsam, both bits and bobs floating around in the sea, which sometimes and often get recovered, but under very different circumstances, shall we say. And looking into this, I read that since the 1300s, there are principles that govern items and ownership and the recovery of items that are lost at sea. And it's different between flotsam and jetsam. Flotsam, if you find a bit of flotsam, i.e. something that's accidentally been lost from a ship, if you find that washed up on the beach, legally, the original owner still has a claim over that. Whereas jetsam, if you find it, That's yours. You can keep that. That's right, isn't it, Johnny?
Yeah, that's right. They have a difference. I mean, people just say flotsam and jetsam. It's just stuff that washed up, but actually, under law, they are different things. Basically, jetsam you can keep, and flotsam, if you find it and somebody else hears about it, it's actually still theirs.
Well, then I started reading into this a bit further. You can find it for safekeeping, right? Because it's floated up on the beach. You can find it for safekeeping, but you're supposed to look after it and register it with the authorities as the fact that you've got this and that you're looking after it. Yeah. If you are found to have flotsam, then you can be fined a significant whack. Actually, you know the book where the whales came?
Hmm.
About the Ciliars, there's quite a little bit about flotsam and jetsam around that, and that when this is, it's flotsam that happens there, and all this stuff gets washed up. But because they're islanders, and you know, the resources that they have are limited and quite rare, I guess sometimes depending on what the flotsam is, like the whole island comes out and they gather it all, and it all just disappears really, really quickly. That's really fun. And there was a shipwreck, or at least it came aground, or at least big containers fell off of, it was called the Napoli. I'm trying to find it here in my notes. The MSC Napoli. It was a ship off of a Dorset coast in 2007, January 2007, where some containers fell off of it in rough seas in the channel, and they floated ashore, and those beaches were just being raided for a couple of days. And there were news footage, I don't know if you remember, I certainly remember it, news footage of people like wheeling brand new, I think they were BMW motorbikes up the beach.
No way.
Great big barrels of wine and perfume and all this. Pampers. There were nappies, great big boxes and containers of nappies. People just going out and helping themselves. But that was flotsam. So what was happening there wasn't legal if indeed they kept it.
Right, that BMW bike could have been reclaimed.
It could have been reclaimed. So whoever took it off could have done it for safekeeping.
Yeah, and that's what they were
and
doing.
Could have registered it with the authorities, I'm sure. Do you know? I think one of those BMWs ended up as an art installation down on the beach, nice. Like in a Perspex box or something like that. It was. I'm not sure if it's still there, but it certainly did happen. Nice. Anyway, so that's one there. Flotsam and jetsam, the difference of it, because I think it can also be used as a phrase for kind of bits and bobs.
Yeah. It's bits and bobs. It should be called axisom and jetsam, shouldn't it? Because it's accidental. Well, it's flotsam. They're both floating, but one's accidental and one's jetsam. So I'll.
Well, that is true. That is the easy way I would remember
axisam.
It. Axisam. So jet definitely comes from jettison. Yes.
I love the way
flotsam. Jono talks about this in the sketch. Flot it comes from like flotter to float.
So but they're both floating.
Accidentally lost. Yeah, I know. So in which case my way would be jettisoned, and then you work back from there. It's not that.
Or
it's not
or
that
it
hard.
Flotted off the edge. Flotted.
Yeah, just flotsamed off the edge.
I like that I put a little point about the rubber duck that's in the sketch.
You did, yeah. Tell that story if you remember it.
Yeah, back in 1992, there was basically a ship that lost thousands upon thousands of rubber ducks, the bright yellow little ducks, in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And of course, they float around. And over the next 25 years, they basically revealed all of the ocean's currents, and you know they were still washing up in incredible places 25 years later,
all over the world.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah,
just, yeah, should have put little sensors in them or something.
Brilliant. Well, there you go. So that was my second one, flotsam and jetsam. Where are we, Johnny? Let's come back round to you. How are we doing? Yeah, I reckon we've got one more round each. If you guys are good with that,
yeah. For my next one, I will go with contronym. Contronym. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but a contronym is a really cool little word, and it's there's not that many of them. There's probably about 100 or so, and a contronym is a word that can be its own opposite, and they're quite hard to recognize even. So the example I have in the thing is somebody thinking, we're in a fix, and then somebody else is going to say, well, I'll fix it. And so there you've got fix, which both means a situation you're stuck in and the means of getting unstuck. And so a contronym is literally a word that means completely the opposite thing. And so I put in the description that I learned it. You should go read this article. It's a really good article called "What Part of No Totally Don't You Understand?" And the whole article is about how when somebody says no totally, that actually means yes, and how on earth it came out in language that no totally means yes.
Have you linked to that article? You have, haven't you?
If you follow the sketch, it's really good. And so that's where I learned about contronyms. Because no doesn't mean yes, but if you have like no totally or no exactly or something like that, then it does mean yes. But anyway, so I'll give you some other examples of contronyms. So we have, you can seed. So if you can seed a field, which means putting the seeds out in a field, but you can also seed a grape, which means taking the seeds out of the grape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can alight from a horse, and a butterfly can alight onto a flower. So you get off and you get on with alighting.
I didn't know that one about the second use of alight. Okay.
Yeah. You can clip something. So clipping can mean cutting something in two, or it can mean you can use a clip to clip stuff together.
Yeah.
You can dust. So dust used to be a noun a long time ago only, and then at some point it also became a verb, a thing that you do. And so you
duster.
You can remove dust, or you can, you know, or I can dust something with flour, and it's like I'm out of that adding dust, or when I'm dusting I'm taking away dust.
Yeah.
And there's a few other ones. The no totally, for example, comes from, there were different reasons why words become contronyms, but no totally came from something called amelioration, which is where you had a word and it sort of got a better sense to it, which you have with something, even when you call something like, I don't know, when wicked was popular, or if you say, oh man, he's really bad, or that's wicked, it meant a bad thing and it becomes to mean a good thing. Over time. So anyway, yeah, I really like it. There's a bunch of other little examples of contronyms, but a limited selection of words that can be their own opposites. Look out.
I wonder if this happens much in German. You know, we're having a chat on WhatsApp about German words and how there's so many more of them and they have so much more meaning, a lot of them. I wonder if it happens much in German, because it feels like this is just a ridiculousness of English and our culture and how we just bafflingly use words.
It's kind of a spongy language, isn't it? And you can stretch it and peel it and mold it how you like.
I mean, yeah, it is really confusing. If you say, like, dust to the work surface, I mean, what do you want me to do?
Put dust on it.
Dust on it.
One. Yeah, so dust to work surface. I mean, literally.
Yeah, literally getting dust.
When you are making
you
bread,
do.
They'll say, dust your work surface with flour.
Sorry, that was what I was trying to explain earlier. But exactly, yeah. Yeah, you dust something with flour, or you dust it away.
That's interesting that it used to only be a noun and now it's a verb as well.
Well, I learned that from Catherine Schultz's excellent article. What part of no totally don't you understand?
Google's another one, isn't it? So Google's become a verb now. Yeah. To Google something.
Verbing is really good. A really nice Calvin and Hobbes. You remember that one? Verbing weirds language.
Verbing weirds language.
Yeah.
Who said that? Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah. Smart guy.
That's a nice one. So that's contronyms.
Contronyms.
Contronyms. And there are loads of other great sketches, by the way, as well, people about synonyms, contronyms. What others are there? Heteronyms.
If we don't have time to cover them tonight, I really like heteronyms, and I actually did like a little 2x2 of words that either written the same or said the same, or written the same and said different, or written different but said the same.
Yeah, and so the little 2x2 matrix.
And each one of them has their own names, and contronyms is this curious one that doesn't really fit in because they just mean the opposite. It's crazy.
Yeah, nice. It's nice. Great, let's move along. Tommy, where are you taking us?
NATO phonetic alphabet.
Avoiding
letter confusion. And I bring this up because my name is Pellero, But basically every single time I'm trying to book anything on the phone, I go, you know, what's your name, sir? I'm Tom Pellero. And I don't even bother letting them say it. It's like, yeah, Papa, Echo, Lima, Lima, Alpha, Echo, Romeo, Echo, Alpha, Uniform. Like that. And when I got married to Sarah, some of the other members of my family, they drew it on a whiteboard for her, because now she was a Pellero and this is because she was Sarah Forcus. It's all very easy. Like, actually, most of the time I book a restaurant, I say I'm Tom Bell Ding-a-ling, because it's just easier. Because it's just a lot easier.
Get special treatment.
Yeah. But when I actually have to Johnny, do you remember when we were in, was it Chile, and we tried to book a flight on the phone, you booked it for me in Spanish, and all the vowels in my name. We got there, we picked up the ticket, and it was the most bafflingly incredible spelling ever.
Sorry about that. So yeah. Do you know, actually, I think Spanish is where I really learned the sort of, I don't know, necessity of this, because there's a lot of V's, B's, and P's sounds, and it's so that they all sound the same. That was the example I gave in the sketch. Is, you know, like, imagine if your code for your plane was YIVBT VBDT, like, they all V's, B's, and P's, you just can't really tell what they are. Yeah, which I guess is why you need this.
Are you fans of it? Do you like using it on the phone? Do you like when other people use it? I mean, I'm not giving away my opinion.
Well, your
on
name's
that.
Rob Bell, so it doesn't come up very often. But when you're called
Pellero, I don't like it.
How else am I supposed to explain? Because quite often they start. So I go, yeah, Tom Pellero, and they go T-O-M, okay, T-E. I'm like, we're on the first letter. We can't even get the first letter. P for Papa.
Yeah.
I understand.
I have to say, I can't really remember all the phonetic alphabet. This is another one where part of the reason for doing the sketch was for me to, like, sit down and learn it properly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And have you...
I don't know. I tend to just make up words. I can't remember the actual NATO phonetic alphabet.
So I don't either. I know my name in phonetic.
You know your words,
but also you end up just making some of them up sometimes. And sometimes you make them up with ones that actually aren't very useful, because some words are actually still quite difficult to distinguish between.
So I'm not sure whether it's that there are two different phonetic alphabets, well, at least two. This, you've been very specific here, Jono. This is the NATO phonetic alphabet. Are there others? Because I know one difference between them is for the letter I, and it's indigo instead of India. Oh. Do you know?
There are lots, and there have been lots of different versions of them. And in doing the sketch, I read a little bit about it. And so they've done thousands of tests.
Okay.
And there are different variations of different languages as well, you know, where they fit better, because these words you would naturally pronounce differently in different sort of dialects. So I think there are lots of different versions, but I am not an expert. But this is the NATO one, which is
gotcha,
in case you ever need it as a handy reference.
Yeah, good. Excellent. I occasionally I use it for my postcode, but only on the second half of the letters, because the first half's obvious. I don't mind using it but I'll use it sparingly. But Tommy, I totally understand where it's an issue that you would want to go straight in and just save it, just be efficient with your communication.
The funniest one is wherever I am and someone comes out, you know, you're in a waiting list, you're waiting at a hospital or something, and someone comes out and you see them look at their clipboard and they go Tom and you're like, yep, it's me, hi Pellero, yeah, you won't
Tom Bell. Bell.
And I see it and they sort of look questioningly at themselves, hi, I'm here, it's me.
I have to say, when people say them to me over the phone, that you know, Echo, Mike, Victor, Tango, Juliet, Kilo, whatever, it takes me a little while to process it. It's a bit like processing a foreign language. I'm playing it back in my head. What's the first letter of that word? Oh, it's K.
Yeah. So that efficiency is gone. You're like,
no. You know, it's still practice.
I hate to admit this, but when it's given to me over the phone, I switch off and just say, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
That call centre job never went too well, really, did it? Yeah.
It's that's my issue. That's my issue. That's purely me just being, right. I don't know, resentful of having to think about something I don't want to. What an idiot. I will come a cropper.
Stop listening.
Yeah, nice. And again, it's a lovely little sketch, isn't it? All right. I'm in two minds.
Compliment and compliment. It's excellent.
Yeah, I should do that one. Okay.
I didn't even realise there were two.
Yeah, and I know that there are, but I don't know which one's which. And
you do now.
Yeah, I'll admit. I'll admit this. Well, I didn't. It's only because of preparing for this podcast. Because up to now, I've just gone, oh, do you know what? I'll take a punt. And I don't even know which one I normally go with. I don't think I even have one that I normally go with. But now, because of doing the podcast and because of Johnny's sketch, I have got a means of doing it. And again, feel free in the next few weeks to test me on it. So it's the difference between compliment and compliment. One with an I, one with an E. One, it means to speak favourably about something. If you compliment somebody on, as Jono has done in the sketch, their green T-shirt.
That's a nice green T-shirt.
That is a compliment with an I, and compliment with an E is where two things go together nicely. And yes. In the sketch, Jono has done a lovely glass of red wine and a block of cheese. Beautiful. Don't they compliment each other well with an E? But the way I'm going to know the difference between these now is that to compliment somebody with an I is you might say, I like your eyes. You've got lovely eyes.
I like your T-shirt.
That's the compliment. No, Tom, eyes, eyes.
It's all about the eyes.
You've got lovely eyes. And that's the one with an I in it. I, the letter.
Yankee.
Yeah.
No, I get it, but similarly, like there, T-H-E-I-R is about someone, so it's got an I in it. So this is the same.
I know, but this is the way I'm going to remember it. Yeah. You've got a lovely green T-shirt.
Eyes.
There's no green T-shirt in the middle of the word compliment, so I'd struggle with that.
Okay. Eyes. Green eyes.
So you've got a lovely eyes. Okay, we can make it green.
Gosh,
I will remember that now because I've made a point to remember that. I will remember that now.
Yeah. And
go on.
So the one on the right, I actually thought it was about because you know suddenly we get things complimentary. I thought that was a glass of wine with a complimentary bit of cheese.
Well,
now is that spelled with the E or is please say that's not a different one?
So you can use complimentary and complimentary are both words with an I and an E.
Oh what.
Right, so you need to know which one is being said because. So let's say you bought this is an example I saw. Let's say you went into a tailor's and you bought a suit jacket, and they said, "Oh, there's this pocket square that's complimentary."
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Now you could interpret that as being that's free. Cheers, thanks, mate. I'll have that. Whereas what the salesman was actually saying was this: "Well, this."
Goes
this
pocket
square will go really well with that jacket, yeah, with an E.
Did you walk off with a pocket square?
Sorry, with an...
sorry, I thought
with
you
an
said
e.
it was complimentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep walking out of shops and buzzing me.
So you need to understand the difference, although you don't because...
Oh,
well, no, you do.
What?
Only if it's written down would you see it. Yeah, there you go. Has that cleared everything up for everyone? It has for me with compliment and
yes.
Compliment. I know where I am
Let's
with that. Complimentary. If something was complimentary, I'm going to ask a secondary question in order to clarify, I think.
Walk out the shop with it.
Yeah. But thanks for that, Jono, because that is going to stick. That's going to stick with me. I mean, we did have a few others, but I'm going to call it a day. You know, we've run up a bit of time there. Any favourites, any that are going to kind of change the way you think about things or change the way you've learned things?
Do you know, we didn't do my favourites.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Now
I
you say,
waiting for
we're
people
an hour in.
Go on, come on, Johnny.
No, we won't do them ever. You can look them up. Another one, Sundoku is probably my favourite, and Less and Fewer is the one that really I was grappling with for years.
Come on, let's spend a bit of time on it. Tell you what you're going to do. I'll probably see how we go with the edit. But let's get these down because we're prepared and maybe these ones or others that we did earlier pop up in an extra bonus Pleonasm. An extra bonus episode later on in the series. Maybe I'll do some unseen
free
bits,
extra
some
bonus.
Unheard bits. Yeah. Some free gift extra bonus bits. Yeah. Come on, John, let's do, which one do you want to go with? Do less and fewer.
Yeah. So we've done a lot of this or that, so I think
yeah.
Affect and effect are like probably the most common, the second most common one people run into. And I got this wrong for years and years and years and years, is less and fewer.
Yeah.
And when to use less and when to use fewer. And so the typical thing is that we tend to use less when we ought to be using fewer. And so yes. When should you use the two of these things? So there's basically two rules. So, and I think sugars is quite a good one. So you use less when things are measured by mass. Like you can't really count them. It's just bits. So there's less sand, there's less sugar, there's
less water,
pieces of grass, whatever. But when it's countable, like sugar cubes, you don't say less sugar cubes, you say fewer sugar cubes.
People. That makes sense? Fewer yeah. People so with
fewer people rather than less people. So that's
unless really there's thousands of people. Would it then be less if there's a big crowd?
No.
It's still countable. But yeah, I don't know. But yeah, maybe you get big enough, you do that. The other one is, and you have some examples where when you have nouns that don't go plural. So furniture is one where you'd say less furniture. Yeah. But chairs versus chair. You yeah. Say fewer chairs
yeah.
Rather than less chairs.
Oh, hang yeah. On. It was all quite simple until yeah. He said furniture.
Yeah.
Got into the plural.
So you don't say furnitures is basically
okay.
It.
Okay.
So yeah. So that one doesn't go plural. So that's a word where you keep saying the less.
Yeah.
But anyway, those are less common as than the mass ones. So I think I come up with those more often. So Think about that. If it's measured by mass, there's just stuff of it, then go with the less. But if you can count them,
yeah.
Go with fewer. Okay. So there are fewer things on the desk. They're not less things on the desk. There are fewer objects because I can count all these objects.
Yes. Okay, that's really handy. Thank you. And you'd never say fewer less... common.
Sorry?
Less common, fewer common.
You
really flummoxed Joe, am I? It was just silence and puzzled faces. Has Tommy lost it?
Why would you say? Why couldn't you say fewer? Is it because common is measured by Matt? What?
I think it's just different.
Yeah, it's maybe a different context. The sugar one, you're right. The sugar one is good because there's less sugar there. Oh, there are fewer grains of sugar.
you could say that.
If there's a countable number of grains visible.
Yeah.
I really picked up on this only about a year ago because somebody left me a slightly snarky comment on some stuff that I posted on social media where I'd used the wrong one. And I berated myself for that. And, you're absolutely right. I fell into the trap. And I can't remember what it was, but I'm pretty sure I used less instead of fewer, which is probably the common. That's what a lot of people do all the time. So since then, I've been really hot on this. And again, it's just one of those. And there aren't many, but it's just one of those that has found a way to slot into my brain. And I feel like I don't have to think about it too much, which I enjoy. But once now that I'm conscious of it, I hear it all the time.
So what about votes? So an MP might get, actually, they should get fewer votes than they expected rather than
absolutely.
Less votes because it is countable. But I feel like it's more common for someone to say got.
Technically, it's not correct. Yeah, it should be fewer votes. Yeah,
so if someone lost a by-election by a number of votes, they wouldn't say, I had less votes than them. I had fewer votes than them.
You had fewer votes, yeah, exactly. And you did, in fact, count them
yes.
In order to find out.
But what they did have was less of the popular vote.
Yes, because it's not... Or is it count?
The popular vote isn't countable.
They certainly didn't have fewer of the popular vote.
No.
Yeah. I linked to, in the description, this I thought it was really funny about this play on the peasants' revolt, and it's called "The Peasants Are Revolting."
Yes.
A baron on horseback saying, "I expected there to be less of you." And he's like, "Fewer." That's really good.
With time,
so that sticks with me.
It feels like with time, I talk about having less time than I expected.
Yeah,
but time is measurable.
Fewer hours are measurable.
Okay,
time is a continuum, right?
You don't have fewer time. Yeah,
because it's not.
You can't count it.
You
can't count time. You can count hours as a measure of time. Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess it's what's lovely about this. I find it really interesting to get into the nitty gritty of the language. Yes. Does it really matter if people understand what you mean and are very clear about what you mean? Probably not.
No,
it's interesting.
It's nice to know how it should be, so to speak.
Yeah, should / could be.
Oh, yeah, exactly. God. And people can use them however they want. Like, I don't mind at all. But for me, I was trying to figure this out, and I was like, because I could never understand when people would correct me on it. Why is that one fewer? And so I had to go figure it out and do a sketch of it. So there it is.
It is, and it's lovely. Again, it's another lovely sketch. It's a lovely sketch. All right, I'll do the Sundoku. Because I had picked that one out as a an optional fourth one to do. So Sundoku, a Japanese word meaning the act of acquiring books and letting them pile up without reading them. And I like the fact that it's quite specific about not just acquiring books that you don't read. It's acquiring books and letting them pile up without reading them. And I'm definitely guilty of this because I'm not actually a big reader, but I really love the idea of being a reader. And so I'll buy a book that I think I'm going to be really interested in. And I know I would be, but I just don't make the time to read them. So they're there. And my intent is still fully to read all of these books. But I have various piles of books around the house.
I'm surrounded by many books I have read, but many books I haven't.
Mm.
But it's just sort of joyful acquiring books and the potential of reading them. You know what? This is, I think, one of the words or the sketches that people relate to most. It still keeps coming up. People keep finding this one. It's way deep down in the archive, but
Sundoku.
People keep finding it. Yeah, because so many people can relate to the stacks of books next to your bed or next to your desk.
Yeah.
There's a whole industry that relies on it.
But the funny thing is, it feels good. It doesn't necessarily feel like a bad thing to have all these books. So that's why the person is sat on the bed with a
smile.
He's quite happy about.
He looks quite peaceful there, actually.
Yeah. Maybe surrounded if you surround it, like it, just absorb it.
Yeah.
Osmosis.
I used to do a huge amount of this, and I'd buy them and I'd have them sitting around. But since Audible subscription, I don't really buy books anymore. I just always listen to them, and I'm quite good at getting through them when I'm listening to them, because you can listen to them really quickly. You can listen at double speed or sort of at least 1.5 speed, and you can get through books pretty quickly like that. I love it.
Well, I think what draws me most to this is the word itself, Sundoku.
Mm.
It's nice to say. It's a soft word to say. Yeah, I love it. You mentioned there about where your inspiration, not where your inspiration, but where you probably first saw this, Jono.
Well, it's, I mean,
your first memories of it.
I'd say the sketch is loosely based on my parents' bedroom.
Yeah.
Piles of books all over the place.
Not loosely based,
you know, which is a great.
It was written about them, kind of it, having been to like your house. It's not even the start.
I'm surprised they didn't make it up.
I remember the first time I went to your house, and it was books all on every stair up the flight of stairs to the first floor. There was a pile of books on every stair.
But your dad was really philosophical about it, wasn't it? Because he was like, he sort of had worked out how many books he reckoned he could read in his life, and was like, therefore, like, he really, really valued books that he'd allow into his life, in terms of he'd like read a couple of pages and then decided whether or not it just wasn't worth that level of investment. What can you remember the details of it, Johnny?
Yeah, I mean, there's a sketch on it. It's 3,500, actually, it's a bit more than that, I think, lifetime reads. It's basically how many lifetime reads you have. So basically, you know, the idea is if you can read 50 books a year, which is reading
a lot,
a book a week, which is a lot, right? You actually have a limited number of books. Yeah, so 3,500 lifetime reads. If you read like 50 books a year for 70 years, and our local bookstore has about 30,000 books, so like, in some ways, you've got to be a little bit selective, you know. Yeah.
And that's if you're reading 50 books a year. Yeah. I don't know anyone who reads 50 books a year.
No, just my dad.
Yeah. Very smart guy.
Such an untapped resource.
Come on, Rob. Hang up this podcast and go read those books next to you.
All right. I will. Wow. That was pleasant, wasn't it?
That's nice.
Well done, guys. So I was going to ask, as a kind of round off to this, do you know, do you have favourites?
I feel dirty asking you that.
I
can't have favourite sketches.
Favourite sketches?
Yeah. I don't want to ask you. Don't answer that. I don't want to know. I'm assuming you probably know all this stuff now because you've spent a decent amount of time on every single one of these.
I tell you
doing
what,
if
you want to learn all of these things, write a weekly newsletter for 10 years and you'll learn them all.
Yeah.
And they'll never leave you.
There you go. Yeah. Brilliant, lovely, well done chaps. Yeah, we've managed to get through a good chunk, but we'd also love to hear from you, our listeners, about which of those word related sketches from the podcast that you'll likely remember most. I mean, you might even be thinking about trying to use some words differently because of the sketches as well, or things that you're going to really try and remember. Let us know. Tommy, email address?
hello@sketchplanations.com.
Thank you. Or you can leave us your comments or send us messages on social media. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I am stuffed. It's time to bring this glossary gala to a close. The wine of words has all been drunk. There's nothing but sinew left on the encyclopedic carcass of jargon, and that tablecloth's really going to need a hot wash. We're going to step outside quickly for a breath of fresh air, but we'll be back in a sec for a coffee and one of those tiny chocolates. We're back. I say we're back. It's just me, Rob, as Jono and Tom aren't around to record the listener comments section this week. And it's my fault because I forgot to schedule a time in because we're not actually recording an episode this week. Anyway, you don't need to know all of that. Now, I referenced in the podcast that I might edit out some of the sketches just to save on time. In the end, I didn't do that because I couldn't choose which ones to leave out, to leave on the cutting room floor. So all 12 sketches that we went through are in there. The consequence of that is that it is a very long podcast. So I'm going to try and keep this comment section as short as I possibly can. That said, we've got more comments to go through this week than any other week before. So this is a kind of quickfire comment section. Let me find them. What's lovely is that this is our 14th episode. So what's lovely now is that we're getting comments in each week that don't always just refer to the previous week's episode. Sometimes they're from episodes weeks and weeks ago. So that's lovely. And the first two that I'm going to talk about, in fact, the first three I think I'm going to talk about here now, are ones from our first quickfire round when we went through a bunch of different sketches that we'd found surprising. So we've had an email from Doug who says, "You talked about night vision in the quickfire round podcast. I believe that this night vision tip is why pirates wear eye patches. So when they boarded a ship, they're able to raid below deck without having to wait for their eyes to adjust. They just flip the patch from one eye to the other. Simples. Might not be true, but makes sense." Brilliant. Doug, thanks so much for that. What a lovely little contemplation on the past. I mean, it certainly makes sense from a technical perspective, as you say. Whether that is true or not, I don't really care. It makes for a great story. Thanks for that, Doug. Another email about the dark. So along the similar lines, this was the sketch of kind of keeping one eye open when you need a wee in the middle of the night. So Dan emails and says, "In the podcast, you briefly mention the restaurant that's in the dark." Oh, this might have been the cross-modal perception, actually. I'm not sure. So Dan says, He went to one in Berlin, and it made him think of one thing that we didn't mention specifically, although not strictly speaking cross-modal perception. There it is. That's what he's referring to. That of heightened senses when one is taken away. So in the dark restaurant, clearly it is sight that's taken away. What struck me was my hearing. Once I sort of got used to not seeing, my hearing literally turned superhero and seemed to get even better over time. I could hear people talking from pretty much every table in the restaurant. And when I say talking, I mean hearing every word. It was quite remarkable. He goes on to say, he's not sure where that fits in with what we were discussing, but it did bring back some of those memories, as well as that of the waiter that made him pour the wine for everyone, even though he had no idea when to stop pouring. And Dan goes on to say, the other fun fact is that all the waiters are actually blind or partially sighted, and that they have to lead you to the toilet whenever you need to go. Brilliant. I know there's one in London. It's called Don Le Noir. At least it used to be. There used to be one in London. I don't know if it's still there. But I would be really, really interested to pop along to one of these restaurants and see what it's like. I mean, pouring the wine without knowing when to stop. That's crazy, isn't it? Surely you're going to make a right mess. But yeah, the superhero powers of being able to hear crystal clear right across a busy room. Very interesting. We've had a message from Sarah on Instagram. Now, this one does refer back to the quickfire round and the twit to woo sketch about owls. So Sarah sent us a poster at Picton Castle and Gardens, which says, not all owls hoot. Some owls do not hoot at all. And most make a variety of other sounds, such as screeches, whistles, barks, growls, and hisses. There you go. A bit of educational literature up at Picton Castle and Gardens. Thank you for sending that, Sarah. It confirms everything that Jono put out in his sketch. I think this is again back to cross-modal perception. Rebecca on Facebook left us a message to say, I too order tomato juice on planes and very rarely order it anywhere else. Aren't humans utter paradoxes? Both incredibly complex and yet also so simple. I think Jono, that was an addition that Jono was talking about last week about tomato juice. I've been thinking about it ever since. I haven't had one because I haven't had a flight anywhere. But I'm really tempted now. I'd really like a tomato juice this evening. And maybe I should put some static noise on to enjoy it even more. All right, now we're heading back to last week's episode on the cost of being late. So Niall emails in to say, hello, lads. One from Steve Jobs, encouraging the OS team to reduce the boot up time. If it could save a person's life, would you find a way to shave 10 seconds off the boot time? He asked. Kenyon allowed that he probably could. Jobs went to a whiteboard and showed that if there were 5 million people using the Mac and it took 10 seconds extra to turn it on every day, that added up to 300 million or so hours per year that people would save, which was the equivalent of at least 100 lifetimes saved per year. That's very, very good. Niall goes on to say it puts another face to the cumulative impact of being late or saving time, as it is in this case. Brilliant. Brilliant. Steve Jobs, such a wise man, just such a really good communicator as well. Yeah, that's good. And finally, on Instagram, I've had a message from Peter saying, oh dear. So Pete says, my wife's timekeeping is abysmal, so I'll often tell her we're meeting people half an hour before we actually are so that we can arrive on time. Lovely. Thank you for that, Peter. And I hope your wife isn't listening, else you might have been rumbled. There we go. That's it for this week. Please do keep all your messages and comments and emails or whatever coming on in. We really, really appreciate them. They're great to read through. And hopefully we'll have a bit more time and the boys will be here next week just to enjoy them a little bit more. But thanks again and cheerio for now. Bye-bye. All music on this podcast series is sourced from the very talented Frank Cinelli. And you can find loads more tracks at frankcinelli.com.